like to have a little, you know, musical synergy, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Sure. 720 WGN, good evening. I'm John Landecker, and Blair Thomas is with us. You're with the Chicago International Puppet Theater.
Yes.
And we are going to, later this half hour, talk to Robin Forhart?
Yeah, Forhart, yes.
Yes, and he is also...
She.
She, I'm sorry.
Yes, she is one of the artists we're featuring in our fourth edition of our festival this week.
Well, let's start with, where shall we start? When is it?
It opens tomorrow on the 20th, and we run through the 30th of this month for 10 days.
And where would this be?
We are in many venues. The festival is across the city. Where Robin's piece is at the Wrigley Building, which is a little unorthodox, but we can talk about that in a bit. And we have shows at the MCA and down at the DeSable Museum at Lynx Hall, and the Chopin Theater are some of the venues. Cervantes Institute as well.
Wow. And these will all be occurring at the same time, or do they go in some sort of rotation?
There is some simultaneity, but you know, to get 100 programs in 10 days, you gotta pack it in.
Wow.
Yeah.
And these aren't lightweight puppet shows, for lack of a better term, are they?
Well, this is puppetry that is mostly geared in its content towards adult audiences.
Yeah.
So it has sophistication to it. It's got story. Subject matter that is interesting, and it's sometimes it's complicated, and there's a staging of a very highly regarded Greek play called The Persians by Aeschylus. There are very comic pieces as well. We have work that's done by solo artists and by large companies. Puppetry is probably not what people think of. What's happening today when they think of the word puppet, they have a reductive idea, and puppetry has a very broad basis. Artists today across the country are doing really fantastic work with puppets.
I understand where you're going with this idea that most of us probably have a great misunderstanding. Not just a little bit, but a gigantic misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Or an ignorance, rather. Not misunderstanding, but just don't know.
It's just
about where puppetry has come to these days.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's got its roots, if you just think about it, in ritual and in ceremony, as well as in very comedic satire as well. You know, the Commedia comes out of the Commedia dell'arte tradition in many ways.
Right.
But it's today people are mixing styles of puppetry, where you have hand puppets and shadow puppets and puppets that are called bunraku, which is this style that originated in Japan. But it's essentially like a 3-foot-tall doll that's a fully articulated character. And Toni Morrison's novel, The Bluest Eye, which is not lightweight material, her first novel, really a fantastic piece, has been rendered.
Let's stop right there for a second. Toni Morrison.
Sure.
Obviously did not write this book with the idea of having a puppet show.
That's
probably right,
Yes, that is true.
Which means that it falls on someone to take the book and convert it to a puppet show, which I would believe would then require, obviously, a script.
Exactly, yes. In that case, for sure. A lot of puppet shows don't have any spoken word or have very few.
Really?
Yeah. So it's, you know, if the primary language is the puppet, the movement of the puppet, the presence of the puppet, speaking is a secondary language along with music. In the case of The Bluest Eye, there's a stage adaptation by Lydia Diamond, who it premiered here at Steppenwolf several years ago, and that adaptation has been used to make a puppet adaptation of it. And so it's a further adaptation, and something I was just talking with Margaret Kemp, who is the principal director of that production, and she was saying that the great opportunity with puppets is that you can stage things that are unspoken and imaginative, and they can capture things that are in the book that in a stage play with actors speaking the characters and the roles they can't achieve. And that is the thing that's really interesting and dynamic about contemporary puppetry.
So what you're saying, in essence, is that the inanimate object can convey more than the human actor.
For sure, a human actor, you have the personality of the human actor, which is its strength.
Right.
But the puppet is a metaphor, essentially.
Okay.
And so you start to function as a metaphor, then it becomes a literary device. And obviously, literary devices have all sorts of rich resonances that are very different from someone who's playing a character and delivering
right.
a monologue, right?
Right. Now, we're going to break in just a minute
sure.
here but and come back, but are you puppets with strings? I mean, is all of, you know, when we
sure.
think,
what is the form? Well, yes.
Yeah.
We do have some marionette pieces. We have a really fantastic marionette show reimagining Paul Bunyan as an environmentalist piece talking about the problem of deforestation.
Yeah.
But there's puppets are also in other ways, like the Bread and Puppet Theater, which is a historic company that, from northern Vermont that does very large-scale spectacle work with large effigy puppets that they hold on poles and sticks. And so there's a whole variety. You have shadow puppets. We've got it all.
We are just scratching the surface. And we'll do more with Blair and Robbins coming on from the Chicago International Puppet Theater Festival. The more I hear you talk, the more questions I have, and we'll hopefully get to some of them. 720 WGN. I'm John Landecker. I'm pleased to have with us Blair Thomas and now Robin Forhart from the Chicago International Puppet Theater Festival. Robin, can you hear us okay?
I sure can.
Great. We've been having a great conversation about this. I think most of all centering around the misconceptions, at least of people of my era, that would have on what qualifies as puppet theater. So, you know, Punch and Judy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got a box.
Yep.
And we've got two puppets in there, and they're beating each other over the head.
Right.
We're long past that, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Well, puppeteers love that form, and
mm-hmm.
so that makes guest appearances frequently in the work that we do. But yes, the frame has expanded. It's exploded, and sometimes it's missing entirely.
Is there a – well, then what – you said described – a 3 foot tall puppet or mm-hmm. multiple feet? How tall can a puppet get before it's not a puppet?
Yeah, well, it's there is no limit to how tall the puppet can get. This is, probably Robin has the same experience as I do, is that when we entered into working in the puppet theater as adult artists, found ourselves in a magical kingdom where anything in our imagination was possible. Is that true, Robin?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a lot of people tend to think about Muppets, you know, when they think of puppets mm-hmm. or something for children, but it could mean so many different things of just animating different forms or objects or bringing things to life, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, anything in nature, anything in the world could be a puppet. Right?
It's true.
Pretty much.
You're right.
You want a rock? That's a puppet.
If you can manipulate it.
Yeah, right. A tree? Puppet. You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? Radio station? Puppet. Just about.
Well,
that's what I'm getting from you about this.
It's an object that's used in performance. And so
yeah.
then it's brought into the theater or the theater context and story enters in and we create meaning for why it's present in the stage.
Robin, I would think that this takes a particularly talented individual that just is not your that has got to be part actor, I would think, and then of course be able to manipulate the puppet in whatever manner.
Well, that's
is required.
Why I'm really drawn to it is because as an artist, I don't have to choose an art form when I'm making puppets and writing shows because I have to. I get to write the stories. I get to sculpt the puppets. I get to, you know, paint their faces. I get to sew their clothes, and then I get to perform them. So it's really like every single artistic practice happening all at once, and they all have to work together to sort of make it a successful performance.
Now, just because we say puppet does not necessarily mean we do include multimedia in the sense that music is sometimes part of this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, yeah. Robin's show and case is a really great one because it's an installation. Mm-hmm. And so it's occupying a storefront in the Wrigley building. And it looks from the outside like it's a convenience store. And you go inside and at first, oh, it looks exactly like a convenience store. And then you look a little carefully and you realize that, no, none of these things in here are sold in a convenience store, actually. And what unfolds in the course of the performance is a puppet film that uses shadow puppetry. And then it uses this Bunraku style that I referred to, where mm-hmm. the puppets are fully articulated. And you go deep into this idea that Robin has developed. Robin, maybe you could say I started saying.
What is that idea that you've developed, Robin? I mean,
well, yeah. So my show, it's called The Plastic Bag Store, and it's a fake grocery store and a real storefront. So people walk in, and like Blair was saying, it appears normal, except for all of the objects are made out of disposed single-use plastic bags, lids, caps, things I've pulled from the garbage and collected over many years and sculpted into fruits and veggies and meats. There's an elaborate bakery and deli, and then aisles of products. And all of them are just made from plastic bags or other kinds of plastic trash. And it's sort of a commentary on the excessive amount of packaging that we are creating. And then the show, the puppet film that is performed in this space, everything inside this store transforms. So all the shelves turn into seating or projection surfaces. It transforms and people experience this film in the store. And the story is about people in the future who have excavated some of our plastic trash and have misinterpreted its significance.
You know, I saw that on Netflix. It's called Raised by Wolves. No, I'm only kidding. But that is a plot line arc that has been used in a variety of media, the idea that humanity has ruined the Earth and it's now in the future and somehow people come back and try to fix what's going on.
It's
I know. I think we're obsessed with that kind of apocalypse, and I don't know why, but I certainly am.
But there's
maybe we're practicing. I don't know.
There's a tragedy that Robin described to me that's like a gut punch, that you're standing in line at the checkout counter mm-hmm. and you look at the things you're buying to take home and eat, and there's so much plastic and packaging just to get food home.
Yeah.
And if you take that in, it is a tragedy for the humans alive today and in the future. And that story is, you go into the deep parts of that story and you see what happens in the oceans, and you see the animals that are suffering because of it. And that's a real thing. This show looks at that issue, but it brings it in a very skillful way in many ways entertaining narrative,
right.
but it makes you think. You walk out of that installation and that performance film, and you're thinking about what you've purchased, what you're holding in your hand all the time, very, very differently.
You know, Lily Tomlin used to do a very short thing where she would say, I go to the store, I buy a waste paper basket, I put it in a bag, I take it home, I take it out of the bag, and then I put the bag in the waste paper basket. So, I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Now, is this convenience store, did I get this right? It transforms during the performance?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
whoa.
So it's sort of it's a set piece, and there are some hidden rooms, and the audience gets to crawl into the freezer and into a couple hidden spaces. You know, different shelves move and turn into seating.
You actually walk into the freezer, but you are going into a very cave-like place.
Yeah.
And this is just one of how many?
It's true. It's one of 16 performance events that are happening across the city. Yeah, so it's quite.
Boy, this is just really intriguing, I have to say.
Yeah, we are North America's largest puppet festival here in Chicago. Yeah. Our home, our city is pulling this off, and it's our fourth edition. And if people feel that they can come out, I know it's a pandemic. You should take safety precautions first, but we have taken safety precautions for all our artists who have come to our city, as well as our audience members, and we want to give people an opportunity to have a wonderful experience.
Very quickly, how do you get tickets?
It's just ChicagoPuppetFest.org, a single word, ChicagoPuppetFest.org.
All right. Blair, Robin, thank you so much for being with us. It's been very entertaining, and I hope people avail themselves of where puppets have landed,
yes,
so to speak.
Here, it's in Chicago. That's where they landed.
That's right. I'm just envisioning how many times I've walked by the Wrigley Building.
Yeah,
you know, and
it's going to be different. Walk down there today.
Thanks for coming. Thanks you for coming in, and Robert, thanks for calling.